On today's playbook, Coach P welcomes Chad Oberhauser, SVP of National Retail Sales at Guild Mortgage, former NFL offensive lineman, and a dynamic leader with over two decades in the mortgage industry. From the gridiron to the executive suite, Chad's journey is all about grit, growth, and giving back. Hear how doing it all in the beginning shaped his leadership, how daily disciplines and aggressive patience drive his mindset, and how he sees change as pure opportunity. You'll also hear how Guild's 2025 rally cry, Full Throttle, is about embracing preparation, precision, power, and purpose to move forward with intention and accelerate success. Elevate your business. Starting now.
Chad Oberhauser here today, SVP of our national retail sales at Guild Mortgage. I'm really excited that you decided to come on our Elevate podcast because I think a lot of people want to get to know you a little better. What do you think about that?
I am so happy to be here, Coach P. Thanks for having me and look forward to this conversation.
Yeah. We've had a great last couple of years. I've had really enjoyed working with you, spending some time on our Fridays, getting a little coaching myself, but just getting to know you, right? And both of us have a lot in common as far as sports and being athletes and bringing that into business. So I'm looking forward to talking to you about that today. So I want to start out first with, you know, kind of your, who is Chad? Like, talk to us a little bit about your personal life and your family. Tell us a little bit about yourself. Where are you located?
Well, I live just outside of Austin, Texas. It's been an evolution. I've been in Texas for now 25 years. Hard to believe. Grew up in Northern California, just outside of Sacramento, and went to school in Southern California at UCLA. And then right after school, moved out of the state of California and ended up in Austin a couple years later. In June, I'll be married for 28 years, which is just awesome. Excited to celebrate that with my beautiful wife. And I have four kiddos ranging from 25 to soon to be 19, which means, Paula, we are now empty nesters, which is awesome. Everybody asks me, like, how is it? And I go, two thumbs up. It's fantastic. So yeah, that's kind of where we are from a family dynamic perspective. And three of my four kids, and soon to be all four, are going to be located here in Austin, Texas, too. So it's good because the whole family's already here.
That's great. And didn't you just move into a new home?
We did. We moved into a new home last year. Got to go through that whole process. We've been in the same home for 18 years, raising our kiddos. And so we moved a little further out and moved into a new home, which you can see the barn behind me, right, where my office is located. But we agreed, my wife and I, Tammy, that when we moved into a new home, the one rule is I did not get to have an office in the house.
And I see she's already kicked you out.
She has absolutely already kicked me out, which was, you know, we've all been working remote for so many years versus going to the office. And I'm sure I tend to talk a little bit loud when we're on these video meetings. So I've been banished to the barn, but I love it.
That's awesome. Well, 28 years, that's impressive.
Yes, so
I want to ask you, what have you learned about partnership that carries over into your leadership position?
That's a great question. I would say from a partnership perspective, the biggest key is making sure that you don't have any uncommunicated expectations, right? I think whether it's business or personal, like we all as human beings, we have our perception of how things should go or what we want to happen. But if we're not communicating that with the people that we work with in business or in our personal relationships, uncommunicated expectations can really, one thing I've learned is it can really create friction. And then I think when it comes from a partnership perspective, trust, right? Trust is super important. Trust when you're delivering good information, trust when you're delivering not so good, challenging information. But really those two things I think are just paramount from a partnership perspective, whether it's on a personal side or on a business side.
And I appreciate that because we've had many conversations where we've said we're going to be very transparent and direct, which
yes.
I really like. I really appreciate that in a partnership.
Yes. Transparency drives trust, for sure.
Exactly. You got to have that. That's the foundation of all relationships. All right. So let's talk. I mean, I think this is super interesting. You were an athlete in high school. You played in the NFL. Tell us a little bit about that. Where did you play? What position did you play?
Growing up, I played pretty much every sport that I could do. I think my parents were big believers in two things. One, you didn't come back in the house until the streetlights were on. And two, it's good to keep a young child and a young boy, specifically in my case, active. Right. So I played everything. I wrestled. I played baseball. I played basketball. Basketball's actually, I would tell you, was my first love for most of my life. Probably just because, you know, it's hard to go play baseball by yourself or football by yourself. But basketball, you can just go find a hoop and go to work. And I know we've talked a lot about our basketball in the past, Coach B, but I didn't play football until I got to high school. And my varsity, you know, football coach in high school, who is an absolute mentor in my life, you know, he came and grabbed me as a freshman and said, "You're going to play football." And I said, "No, coach, I play basketball." And he went, "No, you play football now." And I was like, "No, I play basketball." And he goes, no, you play football now." And I was like,
Okay.
Sure. And so I started playing football in high school and was, you know, a pretty... Back in those days, which is what, the late 80s, right? 89 as a freshman, if I remember correctly. You know, I was a pretty good sized kid as a freshman sophomore. I was already 6'5", 6'6", 220, 230 pounds, which today is not a big, high school athlete. But back then it was big. And so I just, you know, kept playing football and basketball and baseball in high school. And one of my teammates was being recruited my sophomore year. He was a senior and he was being recruited by a bunch of D1 schools. And, you know, I showed up on film because I was playing on the same team in the same offensive line that he was. And that's how my recruiting process started. And boy, I tell you, the recruiting process has got a lot of drama and a lot of stories associated to it. But long story short, I ended up getting a scholarship to play football at UCLA. And, you know, my primary objective in getting a scholarship was I had no real aspirations of really ever going to play football at the next level. I never thought that was going to be an opportunity. I was leveraging football to get a free education. I wanted to be an orthopedic surgeon. That was really what I wanted to do. That's because my mom was a nurse in the ICU and the orthopedics wings for 30 years. And so I grew up around medicine and I thought, hey, I can use power tools on people. Orthopedic surgery is going to be the best. And that's what I went to college for. But as I went through that journey, I ended up, the person in front of me got hurt my second year in college. I got thrown in the mix and was able to then parlay that through college to get drafted in the late rounds to go play football in the NFL. And, you know, my retirement statement says I spent 5 years in the NFL, but the truth is it's around 4.5.
4.5.
That's the truth, but I'll take it. I got drafted to the Bears and I was there for 2 years. After that training camp, I got traded to Seattle. And so I was in Seattle for a couple years. And my last year was with the Houston Texans, their first year in 2002. And my wife and I were already living in Austin. We moved here in 2000. And then I got released. I think it was week 6 or week 7 of the year I got released and moved back to Austin, Texas. And that's really where the mortgage journey started, was shortly after that.
So you get released. What was that feeling like? Because, you know, you were playing. I mean, that's every boy's dream, right? To get to play in the NFL. Were you ready to be released?
No. NFL, the running joke is it stands for not for long, right? I think the average career at that point was a little bit less than 2 years. I felt like I had the ability to play longer, but sometimes it's not about ability, it's about opportunity. And you know, when I look back on it, there's been cases in that 5-year time frame where I don't feel like I got all the opportunities I felt like maybe I worked hard to get. But the honest truth of it is sometimes when I got the opportunity, I probably didn't perform at the level that I could have, right? And that's just the reality is that, you know, athletics at a professional level is extraordinarily competitive and you've got to have preparation and timing need to cross at the right path to take advantage of it. And sometimes it did and sometimes it didn't. So no, I wasn't ready to be done. It was not part of my plan, but when I look back on it, I'm absolutely okay with how it's all played out.
Right. It's interesting when doors shut and sometimes we're not ready for that door to shut, but it shuts. So we don't know why, but then later on everything unfolds and you can look back and say, okay, yeah, that was the right timing. That was what needed to happen. Okay. So you now know you're not going to go back. You got released. How did you transition into the mortgage industry?
You know, I always laugh when we talk about this question because everybody has their own story. Like, nobody went to college to get into mortgage, right?
Right.
We all kind of find our way in. But I had a really dear friend of mine who worked in the mortgage industry kind of as a consultant for large IMBs or independent mortgage bankers. And we attended the same church. And he literally one day, because we had been around each other for a long time, he goes, well, what are you doing? I see that you're back. And I went, well, I'm working out every day for 2 hours. And then I'm trying to find a job because, you know, I don't just want to sit around the house. And he said, well, have you ever thought about the mortgage industry? And I went, no. And he goes, well, I think you'd be good at it. And I went, okay. And this is late 2002. So if you kind of look back in time, refinance boom was really starting to start cranking up in late 2002, early 2003. And so I started as a loan officer, loan originator. At a small shop here in Austin, Texas. And from there, it just kept going. So started out as a loan officer to begin and then just kept building over the years. And those were some very fun and interesting years for sure.
You know, I think we came in about the same time.
Oh, really?
And I was getting out of coaching college basketball at the time and came up to Washington and my friend, kind of the same thing. Hey, why don't you do what I do? And I said, what do you do? And she goes, I sell money. And she was actually had been a teacher, you know, and she wasn't being arrogant. She was actually really good. But I remember going to my interview and literally it was like 10 minutes. Like they, you know, I talked to the manager, Shaquita, and asked me a couple of questions. She's like, you're in. I'm like, okay, what am I doing?
I remember having to explain to my wife, she goes, hold on. So you got a job? I'm like, yeah, I got a job. She goes, well, how much are you going to make? I go, I don't know. She goes, well, don't you have a salary? And I went, no.
I don't think that's a good job. You're like, there's a lot of upside. There's a lot of opportunity.
Absolutely. Yes.
Right. So the mortgage industry has evolved. You were a loan officer. At some point you transitioned and you opened your own company.
Yeah. So back in 2002, 2003. So I started as a loan officer. I was working for a broker shop. And I remember I was just working the network. My friend who introduced me into the industry was like, listen, you know a lot of people. You probably know more people than you think you know. And you should just start working your relationships and your network and communicating with them. And so I was working with that network of athletes or agents or, you know, just that kind of certified financial planners. And within a couple months, I got really frustrated because I would package up a loan. Remember, we'd have to like two hole punch and brat them down and overnight the files, if you remember those days. And I would overnight the file and it would go to whatever company we had assigned the loan to. And then it would feel like it went into a black hole. And you never really knew where your file was. It just was probably on some box or stacked on a desk somewhere next in line. And underwriting times at that point, because the industry was booming, I remember underwriting times being 3 weeks, some cases 4 weeks to get a file underwritten. And so I went back to my friend who introduced me in the industry and I went, hey, there's got to be a better way to do this. And he goes, well, yeah, there's, you know, you could become a mortgage banker. And I'm like, well, what's that? Right. I don't know the difference. And he went, well, basically at that point, you're underwriting your own files, you're closing and funding your own files. And I said, well, that makes sense to me. And so from the time I started into the industry until the day I formed the company was approximately 6 months. And so I formed the company and kind of started down that path and just started building, you know, building things together. And I've had great teammates over the years, but I can honestly tell you at multiple points, I originated, processed, underwrote, closed, funded, shipped, insured, did accounting and did all that stuff. And at the point, it was just what you had to do.
Right.
Looking back on it, it was the best thing that could have happened to me was to put me in that type of situation where I had to learn all of those things because it really helped create who I am today and where I am today because of all those experiences. But at the time, you know, wow, what a whirlwind it was.
I know. So you bring a lot to your role. I mean, because you've done all of it, right? So you have an understanding of everything, which completely makes sense to me now when I ask you certain questions and you know the answers. So you learn all that, you have your own company. And at what point do you get in relationship? Because Guild purchased your company.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
There's a lot of stories between 2003 and 2016 when we became part of Guild. Lots of evolutions of the company over that period of time. I was a part of a group of a bunch of different companies for several years prior to 2016. The decision was made that we would roll the mortgage company out and that, you know, we're looking for a new partner. Guild was the right place to be. I remember meeting with Mary Ann, our CEO at the time, and Terry, our current CEO, and just the worldview, the culture, the focus on the employee, the focus on the referral partner, the focus on the customer, and the focus on home ownership as really the American dream. And one of the things that's just a big distinguisher of home ownership in our country versus other places in the world, I just thought was really aligned. The other thing that I really enjoyed in going through that process prior to making the final decision was how long Guild had been around, how long those two individuals had been at Guild, and how committed they were to investing into the future. One of the things I really thought was, you know, I'm only going to be able to take this organization so far, but if we partner with the right person and the right people and the right company, then man, maybe the sky's the limit. And that really has been the case over the last 8 years, going on 9 years this summer of being here at Guild. Is it really comes down to, like we talked about at the beginning when you asked that question, transparency drives trust, communicating expectations, quickly communicating when things are going great or things are, you know, there's a problem, and everybody working to resolve that because everybody has the same objective, right? That's been such a huge key. So got to Guild in July of 2016. And like I said, almost 9 years this summer.
So very similar again, when I came to Guild, it was 14 years ago, but it was during a time that the economy, everything was not stable. And what's interesting to me is when I'm recruiting people, nobody talks about stability. And that was one of the number one reasons I came to Guild, because at the time they were in business over 50 years. So stability for me was huge. And the other funny part that I always like to say is it was about technology. So I was getting recruited from another company and they'd pay me a little bit more in commission, but I was in charge of all my marketing. Like I'd have to come up with my flyers and all those things. And when I went down to see Marianne and Terry, they were talking about their technology. And the funniest part about technology, it was, okay, push button, get flyer. Literally, that's what technology was 14 years ago.
Right.
And so I was like, I'm in, right? And I think the greatest thing, or one of the things I really love about this company, is it's continued that path about leading the way with technology, with all the things that we have to offer our loan officers. So the technology is what, that flyer is what brought me over to Guild.
Well, and, I'm glad it did.
Yeah, me too. Me too. So, okay, so you're here, your position, you evolve, you become the SVP. You know, we've been over the last 3 years, like we came off, you know, the busiest time ever, 2021. We had many conversations and I'm like, we'd look at different things, cushion sheets, and I'm like, is this really right? You know what I mean? It was rolling, right?
Yes.
And then we get, you know, the MBA and everybody comes in and says, okay, by the end of the year, we're going to be at 4.875. But that's not what happened. It happened rather quickly, right? It shifted and changed really fast. And we've been on this journey of how do we keep our loan officers engaged, right? How do we keep them in the business? And one thing that you and I've talked a lot about is, you know, there's a lot of opportunity in this market, right?
Yes.
You know, sure, it's not easy, but if we can find the opportunity right now, we're going to have longevity in this business, right?
Right. Yep.
So talk to us about what you see. We're in 25 now. We're going in our third year. What are some opportunities our loan officers have in this market?
So that's a big question. I will tell you personally, from a business perspective, I guess some might say I tend to be somewhat of a contrarian. And what I mean by that is I kind of go back to that famous Warren Buffett quote, right? Is when others are greedy, be scared. When others are scared, be greedy. Kind of like, you know, every market correction, you can look at it that it's the sky is falling, or you could look at it like that's going to bring change and that's going to bring opportunity. Because, right, it really does. Change is opportunity, right? That book that you and I have talked about, the obstacle is the way. The issue or the problem is actually the pathway to future success, depending upon how you, you know, calibrate your brain to look at it. And so to me, you know, we came off Mount Everest for a couple of years, right? And when you have a Mount Everest experience and then go directly into the valley, it's very challenging to adjust to that. And especially because this particular cycle, right, it's been extended. But if we all look at the reasons it's been extended, is from 2008, the financial crisis, to 2022, you know, our industry pretty much, with the exception of a few blips, had a 14-year kind of run. Couple, you know, adjustments inside of there. And our industry typically runs in a 5 to 7 year cycle. So we were due for a shift or a change. And I think that's probably part of the reason that this shift in the cycle has been so prolonged. The longer the boom, probably the longer the adjustment. But in that adjustment, when you've got originators and mortgage people that are looking at it and reminiscing about what they just came off of, it's a great time for existing people to reset their mindset, but it's also a really great time for people to get into the industry. As long as they're focused and they're hardworking, right? They put the time in, they get mentored and coached, so they learn how to do things correctly. They've got the right technology and process to support them, right? Because that's really technology is a force multiplier or a lever that can really take. I can put in, you know, one unit of effort, but get out 10 units of results if I do it correctly. And so I think that it continues to be a great time to get into the mortgage industry and today and adopt new systems, technologies, be coached, and be mentored. But I also look at it just from a population perspective. There's still a lot of people in the next 5, 10, and 15 years that are going to buy a home. We don't have enough homes right now for everybody in the country, which is why home prices escalated so much. It's why rents have gone up. So when I look at it and go, man, is it a great time to get into the industry? Absolutely, right? You got to work hard, be mentored, be coached, do the work, find the right system, buy in, and those type of things. But if you can build your foundation today, the question is, where's the opportunity in the future? And is it there? And the answer is yes, right? That people still want to own a home. One of the largest wealth creators in America is home ownership. I mean, home equity is almost at an all-time high and has been for the last couple of years. And so it's a great time to get in.
I agree. And I also think like the opportunity for the loan officers that have been here is when things were so busy, right? The excuse for not learning the technology or systems is I don't have time. And hopefully a lot of people have taken this time to take a step back as it's been slower, to implement better processes, learning the technology, getting more visible. You know, I think that has been a huge opportunity because when we get busy again, right, if we're more efficient with everything that's changed with margins and the cost of doing loans, you know, that should be really, really helpful in the future.
Yeah, someone told me this a long time ago. Time and money are like two ends of a scale, right? So in our industry, when we don't have time because we're busy and we're doing a lot of business, we have money. And when we have a lot of time, we tend not to have a lot of money because maybe the business isn't going so well. I think one of the biggest things is to try to find the balance between those two scales so that you can make the right decisions over the long term, because the longer you stay in this with constant pressure, the more you're going
to
win.
Talking about winning and 2025, talk to us about our theme for this year, Full Throttle. Why did you decide that? Because there's some people who are like, oh my God, Chad, I'm so tired. How am I supposed to go full throttle? But you know what? I mean, I was like, well, we're athletes. We got to do it, right? We got to move forward. Talk to us a little bit about your theme, Full Throttle, for 2025.
Yeah. So in 2024, our theme was forward. Like it was just, hey, we just need to keep moving. Wake up every day and just keep moving forward, right? Because the way you were going to win in 24 is to not quit. And whether you move forward 1 inch, 1 foot, or 1 mile on a daily basis, you are already doing something that most of your competitors won't. So that was our theme in 24. And I remember sitting there in 24 thinking about 2025 saying, what's the next thing? And I was like, well, if everybody's already moving forward successfully, now it's time to hit the gas, right? And so I'm a big car guy. I love race. I've worked on cars most of my life. And so I was like, full throttle. right? Full throttle. Now, the theme does not mean mash the gas pedal down and go crazy, right? Because yes, that brings up the imagery. And I did hear that a lot. I think I heard some of those concerns you expressed too. And I was like, no, no, no. We're going to crash in a big ball of fire. Yeah. No, but I think really the theme is based around how do you apply, you know, we talked about aggressive patience or preparation and precision and teamwork. It's really around this thought of a race where I need to be aggressive to do it. Like I have to be aggressive every day and push forward, but I need to be patient also and look for the timing. If you look at two cars racing on like an F1 track, right? They're always aggressive. They're always downshifting, upshifting. They're always right there, but they're patient and they're looking for their opportunity and they're looking for their spot. And behind that individual driver, loan officer in this case, the funny thing about racing is it's a team sport, right? There's 50 plus people on an F1 team, not including the hundreds of people that make the car and make the engine and engineering and manufacturing. But you look at a communications team at an F1 race, one team has like 8 or 12 people and their entire job is looking at the instruments and communicating with the driver. So it's really about how do you be aggressive and patient over the long course of time inside this team framework where you're driving preparation and precision. And that's kind of what the whole theme was about for this year. And I think it really is just the key for us and the key in this industry is be aggressive, be patient, have great teamwork, know your numbers, be precise, be efficient with your time, with your process, and with your communication. And you're going to end up getting to the winner's circle.
Absolutely. I love the word precision. It's a great business word, right? But where do you think the biggest need is for our loan officers with the word precision? Like, what does that mean? What do they need to be doing?
Having the daily disciplines that will produce the results that you want are key. And when I say daily disciplines, whether that's personal or whether it's professional or some combination of the both, if you do those daily disciplines, when you look at them, you know they're going to produce the result. Then the key is doing those daily, regardless about how you feel about it. How I feel about it when I wake up tomorrow is not relevant. So regardless of how I feel about it, if they're the right things to do, then I do them every day because they're the right things to do regardless of how I feel about it. And they'll produce the result you want because I don't know what your experience has been, Paula, but mine is my biggest struggle sometimes isn't knowing what the right thing to do over time is. It's between my ears. It's that voice inside my head that says, nah, you don't need to do it today. Or, you know what? It's a beautiful day outside. You know, go play some golf. Or, hey, you know what? You have this going on in your personal life that needs your attention. And all of those things are important. Don't get me wrong. But just that commitment to the daily disciplines is the key when applied over time.
I agree. Which sets me up because I was going to ask you, when you hit those moments where things kind of feel heavy, right? I mean, what do you do? How do you, you're in between your head, Things are feeling heavy and you don't feel like doing the daily disciplines. What do you do? What does Chad do? Because you just said you have that happen too. So what does Chad do?
Oh gosh. Okay. So we're going to peel back the curtain a little bit. And what I find works for me the best is whatever it is I'm not wanting to do, I actually say it out loud. So what I found for me, which may just be me, is the most dangerous place for those thoughts to reside or exist is in my head. The second I say, I really don't want to go do blah, 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 whatever it is, and I say it out loud, that's a challenge. Now I've put it out into the world that I don't want to do it. And now I've challenged myself to do it. And then I go, okay. Now I got to do it. And whether that's working out or getting in an ice tub or making that hard phone call, having that challenging conversation or whatever it might be, that to me is what I found has helped me is get it out of here, get it vocalized. Because when I vocalize it, now I'm challenging myself is the way I look.
I know what I've done is like, you know, sometimes fear causes you to procrastinate, right? Or you get paralyzed. So you don't do it. So, you know, the fear of making calls or the fear of meeting certain people or having the hard conversation. And for me, fear has done the opposite. Like I am more fearful if I don't, I say to myself, what if I don't make those calls? What's going to happen if I don't make those calls? Yeah. What's going to happen if I don't have this conversation with the real estate agent? How much worth can this get, right? And that fear has like, it puts fire under me. Like, you got to do it, Paula. So I love that. So you just, you put it out there, you say it out loud, and then it's a challenge, right?
Yeah.
And you know you got to win.
Yeah. So it's, I'll even say this, my wife, Tammy, she'll hear me say it sometimes. And then I'll hear her go from the other room. Well, you know, that means you got to go do it. I'm like, yes, ma'am.
Exactly. Well, the other thing we both like to do is, you know, I'm on a health kick here right now. And I talked on the stage. I mean, we know what we have to do. I was a personal trainer, a coach. I know what I have to do, but I still wasn't doing it. And I was allowing work to get in the way or whatever excuse I wanted. So I hired a coach to help me get back into that. And, you know, you're doing, you like to take care of your health. How's that going? And how do you balance that with your tough schedule? Because you're traveling all the time. Your schedule's crazy. Like, how are you balancing all that?
Well, I appreciate you thinking that I'm so good at it, first and foremost. If you move your body and you exercise and move it, even at the lowest level of going for a walk in the middle of the day, it absolutely changes your body chemistry, and that can absolutely change your mindset. And so for me, regardless of where I'm at, I try to follow the same process every morning, right? Like, I wake up and I do the same thing. If I'm at home, well, it looks like one version of that because I'm at home and I've got some of the creature comforts of being at home, of having a bike in the garage or something like that. If I'm at a hotel or I'm traveling, maybe it's you go for a walk. Maybe it's you know, right there on the hotel floor, you do burpees or you do push-ups or you do air squats and you just keep moving. And, you know, it goes back to what we talked about professionally, the daily disciplines. That's the super key. It's the big key in my opinion. And then, you know, I think the largest struggle for me is a coach told me this one time. He goes, Chad, one thing, you cannot outrun your fork. And I was like, what? And he goes, it doesn't matter how much you lift or work out. It's more about what you eat than it is about anything else. And so I try to stay disciplined on that. But I'll be honest, I've got a weakness for salty fried potatoes. French fries and potato chips are my kryptonite. So I try to balance it out, you know?
I know. That idea that we think, oh, I worked out today, I can have X. And it doesn't really work. And when you look at, like, well, really, how many calories did I burn? It's not that much, you know? So I look at really exercise now is for stress relief and just, you know, my heart health, right? And it's really the food that's going to make the shift is what I'm finding.
Yeah, it's a constant struggle.
I got one last question for you.
Sure.
You're an empty nester. You've got time now. What are you do you have anything planned? Anything fun, a fun trip planned with your wife now that you got a little time? You don't have to take the kids.
I can so we went on our first trip where it was just the two of us, no family, and it wasn't a business or industry related trip. We went on our first trip a month or two ago. It was the first time we'd done that in probably 5 years. Shame on me. I own that one. Shame on me. It's my fault. It's absolutely my fault. But we're enjoying that dynamic of, you know, we had kids in the house for basically 25 years. And we're enjoying that dynamic of having that time with ourselves. We're enjoying maybe going out to eat a little bit more. But I will tell you, even though I say I love being an empty nester, which is great, I will also say we absolutely love that at this point in our life, at this stage, almost all of our kids are local. And so we love the fact, like, during football season, I'd make dinner and people would come over for Sunday night dinner and we watch the football game. Or so it's an interesting dynamic because on one hand, I tell people I'm excited. I'm an empty nester. We're enjoying this season of life. But in many ways, it actually has made myself and my wife enjoy those opportunities when the family gets back together, because now you're not taking it for granted.
Different appreciation for it.
Yeah. Sometimes in life, when you're doing the same thing every day, the routine of it makes you maybe not appreciate it as much. And then you have a shift in life and you go, wow, I'm glad that this change occurred, but it makes you appreciate some of the other things that much more. So I would tell you that I'm living in those two opposing worldviews, let's say.
I get it. Well, I want to thank you so much for your time, because your time is very valuable. I really appreciate your leadership, and it's great to know the person that's leading us has been in sales, has been in all aspects of this industry, because you understand the field. And I think that, to me, is what's really, really important about your leadership. So I want to thank you for coming today. And we are going to continue 2025 going full throttle, working on our precision and our power.
Preparation, precision, power, purpose are the four P's for this year. I appreciate you having me, Coach P. This is awesome. You know what? Full throttle, baby. Let's go.
That's right. Full throttle.
Thanks for listening to Elevate Your Business, a podcast from Elevate, the internal coaching program at Go Mortgage. Glad you could be here for today's playbook. If you want to check us out, head over to gilmortgage.com and click About Us to find Elevate Coaching. Have a question or want to keep the play going? Visit us and send a DM on Instagram at Elevate Mortgage Coaching, or leave a comment for us on YouTube. We're posting extra content, behind-the-scenes action, and everything you need to stay in the mortgage game. On Elevate Your Business, we share real stories and strategies from top producers to help you move forward. So ask yourself, what are you waiting for? It's time to elevate.
Guild Mortgage Company, NMLS identification number 3274, NMLSconsumerAccess.org, equal housing opportunity, equal opportunity employer, Arizona banking license number 0018883, licensed by the Department of Financial Protection and Innovation under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act, Massachusetts mortgage lender and broker license number MC3274, licensed by the Mississippi Department of Banking and Consumer Finance, licensed by the New Jersey Department of Banking and Insurance, Nevada mortgage company number 1141, Oregon mortgage lending number NL176, Rhode Island licensed lender and third-party loan servicer. Guild Mortgage Company, 5887 Copley Drive, San Diego, California, 92111. For licensing, visit guildmortgage.com/licensing. All loans subject to underwriter approval. Terms and conditions apply. Subject to change without notice. Elevate is an internal Guild Mortgage Company coaching program and not a separate entity. Podcast content is provided for informational purposes and based on publicly available materials or tactics used in the industry. The views, strategies, or opinions discussed do not necessarily represent those of Guild Mortgage Company or its affiliates. Intended for mortgage industry professionals only.
Paula Nurschel, NMLS number 383396. Thank you for joining us on Elevate Your Business, a podcast for mortgage professionals brought to you by Elevate, the internal coaching program at Guild Mortgage.